Okay, so Parashat Shlach. First of all, like I said before, it's very exciting that you guys are here. This is our first summer internship program. You'll have to decide whether you're as excited as I am. And I think it's really appropriate that you came on this week's Parsha. And I thought I would share a couple of ideas with you, maybe even see if we can put them together. This is a very strange portion. And among all the different things this parsha represents, you could make a case for saying that this parsha represents the ultimate missed opportunity. I mean, think about it. They were so close. Right? It's the second year. They messed up Cheta Egel, an orgy of idolatry at the foot of Mount Sinai, of Har Sinai. But somehow they manage. They get through that. Okay, kill 3,000 Jews. Not pleasant, but okay. Then they build a Mishkan. Is that the result of Cheta Egel? Is it, was it always meant to be? What does that mean? Famous debate between Rashi and Ramban. Okay. But they're still headed in the right direction. In fact, it's interesting that if you look at the festival of Sukkot, right? So there's a whole interesting discussion regarding the Sukkot of, you know, of the Midbar, of the desert. I'm sure most of you know that there's a machlokas, there's a famous debate in the Gemara as to what the symbol of Sukkot is. Why do we sit in Sukkot on Sukkot, in the booths, right? Do we sit in Sukkot because Sukkot mamash, because they had Sukkot, they had these booths in the desert, and they dwelled in them, and anybody who's ever spent time in the desert, it gets pretty cold at night, especially in the winter. Or perhaps the second opinion of the Gemara, which is the Sukkot aren't actual Sukkot, anybody remember? But rather, Ananakava, right? Clouds of glory that protect the Jewish people. What is that machloket really about? What is that debate really about? And on a deeper level, why do we celebrate Sukkot on Sukkot? Now, we celebrate Shavuot, Chag Matan Toratenu, because that's when we receive the Torah. Now, it's really not when we receive the Torah, because that was when we started the journey that ended in disaster 40 days later, but let's put aside that uncomfortable detail. At least we understand the date makes sense. Why do you celebrate Pesach when we celebrate Pesach? Because that's when we got out of Mitzrayim. We got out of Egypt, okay. Sukkot? What happened on Sukkot? So, there are a lot of different opinions that discuss this. I have a good friend, Meir Becker, who is a doctor, well-known doctor, but he just pretends to be a doctor during the week. Really, he's a tremendous Talmid Chacham. And every once in a while, I get to grab a vort out of him. And he shared with me once an idea that really stuck with me. If you think about that debate, and you put it in its historical context, the Jewish people, when they left Har Sinai, they were on their way to Eretz Yisrael. They got sidetracked. And even now, they're this close to Eretz Yisrael. Does anybody know what the date, midrashically, according to Jewish tradition, what is the date of this week's parsha? Right? Anybody remember? Vayivku balailahu. When the spies get back from their terrible 40-day journey, it says the Jewish people cried on that night. And Rashi quotes the Medrash, Atem bachitim b'chia shel chinam. You cried for nothing. You were so nervous about getting into the land of Israel. Eten lachem b'chia shel mamash. I'll give you a reason to cry. And that date was Tisha B'Av. As the Gemara says. Now whether that's literal or allegorical, it doesn't matter. Let's assume it's Tisha B'Av. It was the 9th of Av. What would have happened if the spies had not brought that report back? Or what would have happened if the Jews would have listened to Kalev and Yeshua, the two spies who said, Alon Aleh, we can do it? They would have gone straight to Eretz Israel. And if they would have gone straight to Eretz Israel, they wouldn't have needed Sukkot in the desert. Right? So, you could make a case for saying that the debate between Sukkot Mamash and Anane Kavod, between clouds of glory as the symbol of Sukkot and actual Sukkot, is the difference between what was and what might have been. Right? And the point in time where we have the opportunity to decide which of those will be the case, what will be or what might have been, is this week's parsha. And by the way, if you look thematically through this week's parsha, you will find that every piece of this parsha alludes to that. I'll give you another example, right? What famous mitzvah do we read about in this week's parsha? I think it's in this week's parsha, right? Tzitzis. Right? Tzitzit. Now what is tzitzit? Why do we wear tzitzit? So Rav Tzadok HaKohen has an amazing idea. Right? What's the core? By the way, if you want, I'm not used to teaching Kohen groups, but if you want, we won't get to it tonight, but I would be happy to explain to you a personal opinion about why tzitzit is a mitzvah given to men, and my women are exempt. I'm not talking about the debate between whether a woman could take it on and not take it on, Tosas, Rashi, whatever, right? But nonetheless, right, there's a very deep idea here. But putting that aside for the moment, what's the central mitzvah of tzitzis? And by the way, just to be clear, now we're dealing with the realm of opinion, but even if you're not obligated to wear tzitzit, you are absolutely obligated to learn from the mitzvah of tzitzis, because it's in Torah. And we say Kriyat Shema, and in Kriyat Shema, we have the mitzvah of tzitzis, right? So what is the core of the mitzvah of tzitzit? What are you supposed to do? What does tzitzit do for you? It reminds you of what? Of mitzvah. So Rav Tzadok HaKohen says, the foundation of chet. What is the foundation of chet? By the way, we should take a moment. The word chet, we're getting into the realm of opinion here again. The word chet does not mean sin. Sin is not a Jewish word. Sin is opinion. Sin is a Christian word, a Catholic word. It implies evil and damnation and purgatory and no way back. Judaism believes that a chet is not a sin, it's a mistake. In fact, in modern Hebrew, you go to a target range and you fire at the target and you miss the target. What do we say in modern Hebrew? Hichteti et hamatara. Right? I missed the mark. A chet is a mistake. I missed the mark. I made a mistake. Right? And that's, by the way, that fits a lot with halacha, because you don't bring a korban chatat, which is mistranslated in the Torah as a sin offering by some people, right? You don't bring that offering if you do something b'mezid on purpose. You only bring korban chatat, unless it's a public, communal korban sacrifice, you only bring that sacrifice when you made a mistake, when you did it by accident. And if I purposely do something, there's no korban chatas, right? So a chet is a mistake. What is the core of the mistakes that lead to our greatest failings? Says the Tzadok HaKohen, shichacha, forgetfulness. Think about this for a moment, right? If you could really remember, if you could really hold on to the moment that you're meant to hold on to, you would never get to that moment that you wish you could forget. Right? Let's take an extreme example. Right? Person gets married, and then one day he messes up. Right? It's one of the Ten Commandments, one of the Aseret, well, that's also not a good translation, but whatever. The Aseret Dibrot, right? Dibrot doesn't mean commandments, it means Dibrot, Dvarim, sayings, things, whatever, right? One of those 10 critical items is lo tinaf. You're not supposed to adulter. Okay? So how does a person come to adulter? Like, when you think about it, it's nuts. It's nuts that a person adulters. Like, you would give up all that for what? Right? Now, no person is standing under the chuppah getting married saying, can't wait to adulter. Like, that's just not how people think, unless they're psychotic. So what happens? A person finds himself in a moment and forgets. If you could hang on to that moment, if you could be in that moment, you could never do that. In fact, that's one of the goals of a healthy relationship. You want the relationship to get to a space where, like, I don't, you know, Baruch Hashem, I travel a lot, but I don't, like, that's, thank God, not something I have to deal with. I hope it never is. Not because I'm some tzaddik, because who in the world, because how could a person do, how could you, it can't be. Like, you're in a marriage, you're so immersed in that marriage, you're so in awe of the person that you're married to, how could you ever, you would never. Right? You walk out of Shul on Yom Kippur. And, you know, I remember when we started Araita. The first year we started Araita, I was really nervous. Daniel will remember this. I was really, this is Daniel Ackerman, by the way. He was from the first year of Araita, right? Now you're memorialized forever, right? So I was really nervous. I went to Gush. Gush is like, you know, everybody comes back for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. 1,000 guys, all the women inside, it's unbelievable. It's like a roar. And we had like 17, 18 students, and we're going to try to pull off Rosh Hashanah. How are we going to do that? We have one secret weapon. We had the roof. And we really almost decided not to do Rosh Hashanah and Kippur. We'll go to Akoto, we'll join them, whatever. Then we said, look, if we want to be serious, you got to have Rosh Hashanah. It was unbelievable. You go up on that roof. We go up there for Kol Nidre. We go up there for an Ela. If you're ever back in Israel, then you're more than welcome, right? You can ask the guys. You go back up on that roof for an Ela. Be'etni Lat Shar. And you hear the singing coming from the Kotel, and from Parat Yosef, and from Yeshivat HaKotel, and from Netivai. It's unbelievable. And you start to sing, and it's that window where you're not in a rush, because the sun hasn't set, and you're going to blow shofar, and you've done Birchat Kohanim, and there's no rush, and you're so in a moment. And you finally got to the point where, like, the fast over to it, like, you don't care. And it's hard to describe to people who haven't experienced it, but people who come to Arayat HaShana, they can't wait for Yom Kippur. And I'll tell Shana Aleph, guys, you'll see. If you come back in next year, you'll be excited about Yom Kippur. They look at you like, I don't think so. And then it's true, right? And if you could hang on to that moment, you would never have a chet in your life. Shichcha is the secret of chet. It's because we forget. If we could learn how to hang on, that's the secret of Shabbat. Shabbat is all about learning to be in the moment. If we could hang on to those moments, we would never make mistakes. That's what tzitzit is. Tzitzit is all about learning to hang on to the moment. The mistake that tzitzit comes to correct is, oh, it might have been. It is fascinating to note, of Shimshon Farley has a whole discussion about this, why women are less prone to make those mistakes than men, but that's another discussion. That's another discussion. Not all women, right? But some. So why'd they do it? Why'd they do it? I mean, I could understand if a guy in Oraita, he doesn't know any better. So he gets offered, you know, people come to visit, right? I remember it was like the second year of Oraita as a student. I think it was the second year, it was the third year. And some relatives came to visit, and they were going to be going to Uman. And they offered, they wanted to take him to Uman for, I forget if it was Rosh Hashanah or Kippur. And they were going to stay somewhere nice, and then they were stopping off in Europe, they were going to stay in a hotel. And they wanted to go to Uman, you know, Kever of Nachman. So he came to tell me that his relatives and this and that, and he's going to meet them, and it's going to be unbelievable, whatever, and he's going to Chassidut, and he's going to be always in Mitzvah Shoshan. So I said to him, let me find the right delicate way to say this. No. Big mistake, right? And I was trying to explain to you, you don't know what you're missing. So finally I called up the relatives, I said, listen, you're doing this boy a disservice. I'm not doing this because I need another boy. Well, it's true. I'm doing it because... And I went over to him. I remember this vividly. I remember who it is. I went over to him during the Ela. And I said to him, you know, you almost missed this. Like, you were going to go travel. And I'm not chas v'shalom disparaging people go to Uman. The beautiful things that happen there. God forbid. But like, you're traveling 1,500 or 2,000 miles, whatever it is, to visit a kever of a very holy person who died 150 years ago. And you're like, you know, a 20-minute drive from the kever of Avraham Avinu. We forget where we are. But the Jewish people, on the eve of entering Eretz Israel, with Moshe Rabbeinu on one side and Aaron, Kohen Gadol, the high priest on the other, these are people who walked through the Red Sea when Hashem split it for them. These are people who, they ate man every day. It's crazy. So some of the commentaries, some of the first Malbim talks about this, suggest that you can get so used to the moment, you don't even know that you have it. Right? The Pasuk says in Shmot, Perakted Zayin, right? Hinini mamtir lachem lechem in Hashemayim. I'm going to rain down man. I'm going to rain down bread for you. Leman anasenu hayelech b'torati imlo. I'm going to test them to see whether they follow my Torah. That's a crazy test. Think about it. I'm going to give you a test. Can you imagine? You get your teenage kids together, and say, I'm going to give you a test. Okay? I'm going to give everybody $200. You can go to the mall. You can buy whatever you want. Then you're all coming with me to 770. Lubavitcher Rebbe is going to have Trias HaMesim. He's going to come back, and we're going to learn with him. Then we're going to go visit Rav Moshe, because he's going to come back too. And then we're all going to get 400 grams burgers and top it off with cholent. I mean, and I just want to see if you remember that I'm a good dad. What's the test? Like, that's ridiculous. Right? I'm going to bring you man, which is going to taste like whatever you want if you buy the Medrash. Why is that a test? So the Rambam and the Morne Vuchim, Chelek Gimel and the Guide to the Perplexed, he says there are different types of tests. Sometimes we're tested by what we don't have, and sometimes we're tested by what we do have. He says, this is the test, I'm paraphrasing, of the good times. When you have it so good, do you remember where it comes from? That's our generation. That's our generation. You know? I went to, I've gone a few times to a Pesach program. You know, they invite you to come and teach. And we were in Florida on Shlichut, and longer story than we have time for, and got invited to be like the rabbi in his Pesach program. Really wasn't so thrilled about leaving home to go for Pesach, but at the time we weren't at home, and I didn't know what to do. I thought, you know, should we do this or not? I asked my wife, so my wife said, well, let's think about this. I could stay here. I can make 8 days of Pesach in the community. I don't know anybody yet, and all your students can come for probably 20 meals. Or we can go to a hotel, and I can just relax. Huh, tough decision, right? So we went to this hotel for Pesach, and it was fascinating to me to watch how people behave. There's a minhag. It's now in the Sefer HaMinhagim, in the Book of Customs of the Kolbo, that every Erev Pesach, a Jew is supposed to go to a deck chair and take a towel and put it there to reserve it. That's like the big, right? And the big problem is, do you get your deck chair? Is the line too long waiting for the steak? Right? Or in our case, on a more serious note, right? We're in Yerushalayim in the Old City after 2,000 years of dreaming, and there's people talking outside the window making noise. In Yerushalayim! In a Jewish state. My wife likes to call these first world problems. You know? We forget. Hinanim mamtir lechem lechem in shamayim, right? Things are so good. So the Jewish people are on the banks. They're literally about, they're a few days journey from Eretz Israel. And you know, the Medrash goes bananas with this. I mean, if Moshe Rabbeinu would have gone in, he would have built a base of Mikdash, there would never have been a need for a Mishkan. It would have lasted forever. Mashiach would have come right away. World peace would have brought it. Unbelievable. And why did we give this up? Why did we give this up? 12 spies go into Eretz Israel. I'm going to skip for the moment the question of why they go in and that whole story. And they come back, and something's wrong. Now, if you look carefully at the report of the Meraglim, of the spies, it actually isn't so bad. Right? They remind Hashem of a pasuk that's mentioned by Hashem at the burning bush, and they're the second time they actually call Eretz Israel Eretz Zavat Chalav Uvash. When we sing that song, you know, remember when you were kids, Eretz Zavat Chalav, you're quoting the Meraglim, you're quoting the spies. They said it's a land of milk and honey. This is great. Ephes, but ki azam, the people are strong. It's true. They're sitting in fortified cities, b'miftzarim, right? Lo nucha, we can't do it. Now this is interesting. First of all, just an aside, really, really valuable, powerful lesson, right? Rav Soloveitchik talks about this. One of the challenges with what the spies came back with was not in what they said, but was in how they said it. They said, Efes ki az ha'am. But the Canaanite nation is strong. People always hear, and they will only remember what comes after the but. Now think about this for a minute. And I'll tell you, I'll share with you a little experiment, which is unbelievable. Okay? You've got some job. I don't know, you're a dorm counselor, right? And the principal calls you into his office, and he says to you, look, I want you to know, you're doing a great job, and the kids love you. What are you waiting for? You're waiting for the butt, right? And we've all been in this situation. You know, you're dating some girl. This happens when you get married. Honey, I love you. I'm glad that you cleaned the house, and I really appreciate you did the laundry. What are you waiting for? You're waiting for the butt, right? But you haven't been through Shas yet. You know, whatever, right? Okay, right? Because you're waiting for the but, you don't hear what comes first. So I remember the first time I saw this drush, great idea. So I decided to do the opposite. When someone here, you know, I need to talk to somebody, an employee, whatever it might be. So I actually start with the but. Let a person sit down and say, listen, I got a problem with what you're doing. You know, you're not waking them up, you're not doing this, you know, you're not in the basement, I don't know, whatever it is. But I do want you to know that I think you're phenomenal. It's unbelievable how people can accept that critique when you reverse the order. Try it. It's unbelievable. It's a simple rule. It works. For a lot of reasons that are beyond the parameter of this discussion. So, the butt was too strong. Kalev ben Yefune. Kalev ben Yefune. It's an interesting question why it's Kalev and not Yoshua. Yoshua is connected to Moshe. There are all sorts of discussions. Maybe they wouldn't be able to hear him because he's Moshe's puppy. But Yoshua doesn't get up, which is unbelievable. So Kalev ben Yefune literally jumps up on a rock. Right? And what does he say? Right? This is a big moment. Vayas Kalev atam. He gets everybody quiet. Can you imagine? I mean, if you picture this scene, the Meraglim, the people, they're talking to the right, Vayiragnu bo Eliyahem, they're murmuring, this is bad. And Kalev ben Yefune somehow gets up there, and he gets everybody to listen for a moment. He has this moment. He has this moment, he has them. He just has to find the right words to say. Right? Just has to find the right words to say. I want you to know, you will be, if you haven't already, I'm sure, be in situations where you know that Hashem has given you an awesome mitzvah. It's an awesome mitzvah. And you just hope that you're gonna find the right words. I don't know, your roommate's dating a non-Jew and wants to talk to you about it, and you know that what they're really saying is, I'm struggling with this. If you could only find the right words. You know? A friend lost someone close to them. They're broken. They want to talk to you. If you could only find the right words. So Kalev has that moment. Kalev has that moment. Right? And he gets everybody quiet. And what does he say? Anybody remember? Unbelievable. Unbelievable. Dale Carnegie School, he did not attend. Right? Alon Alev, come on, we can not open Akiva loves this. Alon Alev, that's great, right? Are you kidding? Seriously? We can do it! You can't come up with anything better than that? Let me ask you a question. You're Kalev ben Yefune. Okay? It's a little over a year since you left Mitzrayim. And you got to convince these people, we can go into Eretz Israel. What would you say? What would be your most cogent argument? What do you think?
We've got to Mitzrayim, like, get into Eretz Israel.
Yeah, like, hello! He split the sea! We can do this! They don't mention it. Kalev does not mention the miracles. He doesn't mention anything. It makes no sense. And the people obviously don't want to listen to him because what a loser argument. Like, it's ridiculous. So, was tutzach, what? So, Lubavitcher Rebbe, in one of his sichot, otherwise known as sichos, says an amazing thing. And this is not pshat. I want you to understand it's not pshat. We have to talk about what pshat is, but whatever. But I want you to know it's deep and something to think about. It cannot be. These were nisim. These are just mentioned a parsha or two ago. These were giants. It cannot be. Roshei Bnei Yisrael Hema. They were the leaders of the Jewish people. They must have been giants. It cannot be that they don't believe that Hashem can take them to Eretz Yisrael. And it cannot be that they don't believe that if Hashem says go in, that they can go in. So that can't be what's bothering them. What's bothering them, right? What's bothering them is not that they don't believe that Hashem can do miracles. What's bothering them is that they know Hashem does miracles. And they understand what they're being asked to do. They're living in the greatest yeshiva of all time. They're studying Torah from Moshe Rabbeinu. They're living a life of the miraculous. They're protected by Anani Kavod, clouds of glory. Right? The Pasuk says, Simlatcha lo valtam me'alecha. Their clothes never run out. Which may be literal, or may allegorically mean they don't have to worry about anything. You know when the Jewish people started to come home after the Holocaust. So one of the institutions that helped to build the state was the kibbutzim. Now, the socialist movement that gave birth to the kibbutz, I'm oversimplifying, but certainly part and parcel of it, you know, has sort of hit reality. And most kibbutzim are either closing down or privatizing or becoming more capitalistic, etc. And most people think that what that means is that the social experiment, the kibbutz, doesn't work. Children don't live in batei yeladim, in communal housing anymore. People don't eat in communal dining rooms to the same degree. People make their own money. They can buy their own TVs, right? You know, capitalism is... And so people think that means that the kibbutz is a failure. It's not true. It just means that the kibbutzim were there when they were needed. They were a window in time. You know, everybody thinks that the Holocaust ended in 1945. It's not true. Imagine if you're a survivor. Imagine you were, I don't know, a law student. 1935, you know, 33, and you were, what, 23 years old? And then the Nuremberg Laws are passed. And so now you can't get your law degree. And even if you had a law degree, you couldn't practice. And the next thing you know, you lose your house. And then you can't hold a job. And then you end up in a ghetto. And eventually end up in a camp, and then another camp, and then another camp. And let's say somehow you actually survive 12 years in the hell that is Nazi Germany. And now it's 1945. You're still in the camps. They're just called DP camps. Same camps. People don't realize this. Displaced person camps, right? Same concentration camps. Except now there are British or American guards instead of Nazis, and the food's better. And there's medical care. But it's your and mine worst nightmare. And let's say in 1947, 48, you finally manage to get on an illegal immigrant boat that sneaks in under the nose of the British, and you wade ashore in 1948. And they're looking for every able-bodied volunteer they can find, so you volunteer, because this is your new home, and they're going to destroy you. And, you know, Rav Herzog gives a heter for people, their photos of Haredim, whatever that term means, digging ditches on Shabbos, because they were sure that there was the next Holocaust was coming. They were surrounded. And let's say you fight, and let's say you survive. Maybe you survive Latrun, or you survive Gesher Adalom against the Egyptians. And now it's 1950, and the ceasefire is finally signed, and you can finally breathe. Right? You were 23 years old in 1933. You're now 40. You've got no wife. You've got no kids. You've got no money. You've got no profession. You've got nobody. Holocaust is over for you. Except you found a family in a kibbutz. So the kibbutzim made this difference. The Meraglim understood that they were in the greatest kibbutz, the greatest yeshiva of all time. They were getting manna from heaven every day. Now, they had a tradition, and this proved to be correct, that when they entered Eretz Yisrael, the miracle stopped. And they did gradually stop. Right? First they have, you know, Yericho, and Shemesh B'Givon Dom, but eventually they're fighting wars. And people are dying. And the miracles stop. So the Meraglim, it's not that they don't believe that Hashem can do miracles. What the Meraglim are saying is, we're not ready to leave this. Like, we know what's going to happen when we enter Eretz Yisrael. All this is going to stop. We're not ready for this. What's the rush? Let's stay in yeshiva another year, another 2 years. Let's be b'mechitzato shel Moshe Rabbeinu. Let's learn Torah. Let's sit in the Beis Medrash. And that's why when Kalev jumps up, he doesn't talk about the miracles. Because that was their point. That's why Moshe has nothing to say. Because if Moshe gets up and says no, the spies will say, you see, how can we leave this? And Yeshua is an affectation of that problem. Now let's say that that's correct. That's a completely different way of looking at the story of the Meraglim. What that means is that the challenge of the mistake of the spies is that you have to know when it's time to move on. Right? The goal is not here. The goal is not here. But what moves me the most about you and this program, college students, is you did what the Meraglim were afraid people couldn't do. You left. You came. You were here. You tasted the man in your various yeshivot and mechalot. You poured through the Sfasemes, and you learned Gemara, and you studied Ramban, and whatever you learned. And you were in the greenhouse of life. I don't know if you felt that way, but I remember being in Gush, especially before I went to the Army. I felt it was like the greenhouse of life. It was unbelievable. Like, when will you ever have it that good again? But we're not supposed to stay there. That's not the goal. Just like we weren't meant to stay at Har Sinai. We were meant to move on. And you did. And quite incredibly, you somehow hung on to what you tasted here. You know? One could make a case, Svasemis talks about this, for the idea that there are many experiences that we have that are meant to take us back a little bit to the desert. Right? Wake up in the morning, we're meant to experience tefillah. We're going to talk about that this summer. It's kind of an opportunity to take a step back. Before I enter the world, be in the desert. Taste the Beis Medrash. Taste the miracles. Taste the miracle of life. Modim anachnu lach. Al nisecha, al niflotecha, shebechol yom imanu. We don't appreciate this. We are living in a time of miracles. It's unbelievable. I have a friend, and they think they found something really scary inside of him. So he had to go to the hospital. It's a long story, but the short version is, Baruch Hashem, they found out it wasn't what they thought. How did they find this out? They gave him a pill. Lives in America. They gave him a pill. He swallowed this pill. Have you heard about this? It's a camera. And they watched this camera inside his body. When I was a kid, I don't even remember the name of the movie. There was a movie like this, of this guy who becomes miniature, and he goes inside the body. And I remember thinking, wow, that's like nuts. Like, that's crazy, right? Who thought of that idea? What a great movie. And we're living this. It's unbelievable. When your children come to learn in Eretz Israel, we'll be telling them, listen, you have to churn off the chip in your brain when you come into this medrash. Right? Because like you'll just, you know, you'll pull your ear and the internet will come on and you'll blink your eyes and the lights will go off and it's unbelievable. And you don't want to leave that. You know? Chazal say, why does a baby cry when it's born? Because a baby doesn't want to be born. Baby doesn't want to be born. It's great inside the womb. It gets everything it wants. It gets, you ever see that movie, what was that, Bruce Willis movie, Look Who's Talking, you remember that movie? And the baby's thirsty, so it starts pulling on the umbilical cord, and right there, I mean, you don't know what I'm talking about, but okay, whatever, right? Okay? I'm getting this look. I can always tell that when there's this special look you have, like, what, right, okay? It's great in the womb. You don't have to worry about a budget. You don't have to worry about dating. You don't have to worry if the food's kosher. You don't have to worry about anything. And now, like, you're thrown out into this crazy, noisy, light, terrible world. So you scream because you don't want to be born. Judaism says the baby has to be born. You know? And I'll just finish. There's a lot more to talk about in this parsha, but I'm going to listen to my wife, who believes that less is more. It's interesting that Moshe Rabbeinu does not enter Eretz Israel. Yeshua takes them into Eretz Israel. And the Gemara asks why. Oh, so I know, you know, he hit the rock, talked to the rabbi. You look at Chazal, they struggle with this. Like, that's ridiculous. It was always meant, right? It's kind of like the second generation not going into Eretz Israel. The first generation not going into Eretz Israel. So everybody say they don't get Eretz Israel because they messed up, either because of Chet HaEgel or because of the Meraglim, the spies, the sin of the Golden Calf, the mistake of the Golden Calf, whatever, right? But that's ridiculous. You know, Hashem knows from the dawn of creation, the Torah was written, that this is what's going to be. Right? Vayara amki boshesh Moshe. The people see that Moshe is tarrying, he's late. And Rashi quotes the Medrash, you know, there's this whole, like, is it the 40th day, is it not? Do you remember the story, right? Do you ever think about that story? That's ridiculous. That's a ridiculous story. Moshe Rabbeinu is up on Har Sinai, Hashem's talking to him. Hashem says to him, Lech red ki shichetamcha. Go down, they've become destructive. You couldn't tell me this yesterday! When I could go down and do something, now it's too late. And we're not talking about the Himalayas, it's on our Sinai. Just lean over, take a look, right? Moshe Rabbeinu was late because he was meant to be late. And the Jewish people make that mistake because they were meant to make the mistake. How do I know that? Because it happened. And it was always meant to happen. They were not meant to get in. Whatever was meant to be, was meant to be. Moshe was never meant. So the Gemara seems to suggest, why was Moshe never meant to go in? So the Gemara answer is very weird. It's like the kind of answer you'd find in an ashram in India. Because Moshe was like the sun and Yeshua was like the moon. That's what the Gemara says. Right? Why didn't Moshe get to take them in? Because Moshe was like the sun. Ooh. Crunchy. Like, what does that mean? Right? So I want to tell you what that means. So Sassanus talks about this too. Moshe Rabbeinu is like the sun. Because Moshe Rabbeinu is as close to God as a human being can get. And when Moshe Rabbeinu comes down off of Har Sinai, we can't look at him. Remember that? He has to keep karanor panav. He has to wear a veil. They're so in awe of him, they can't even look at him. You can't look at the sun. Its light is too great. Right? The moon, on the other hand, the moon is reflected light. You can look at the moon. And what's even more interesting, when the sun is out, you don't see the stars. You know, when you're a kid, you think the stars go away. But as you get older, you realize the stars are there, it's just you can't see them because the light is too bright. Right? Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't take the Jewish people into Eretz Yisrael because he, you know, it's like very wealthy people, successful people. Sometimes you meet kids of very successful people and they have all sorts of challenges because their parents were so everywhere, there was no room for them. when the Jewish people are in the desert, Hashem is so everywhere, there's no room for us. So that's why we're always rebelling, just like wealthy kids rebel. The water's too sweet, the water's too bitter, me, I want, whatever it is. Right? And then Moshe gets out of the way, Kaviyachal. And the Jewish people go into Eretz Yisrael, and the miracles stop, and they have to work. And you know what happens in Sefer Yeshua? There's no more rebellion. There's no problems with the Jewish people. There's one guy who makes one mistake in all of Sefer Yeshua. Because the people are born. And that is the challenge. You know? But every once in a while, you gotta go back and you gotta taste it. You gotta remember. You gotta remind yourself of those moments. You gotta have a tzitzis moment. You have to experience. You know, when I went into the army, I was very nervous. Especially, I became an officer, and I knew I would be the only guy with a kippah on my head. And I was like, how am I going to hang on to whatever it is I want to hang on to? So I don't wear my tzitzis out. I wear them rolled around, brisker style. But when I went to the army, I decided I wore them out because I felt like I needed to be sort of more aware of the challenges. And every once in a while, when challenges would come along, and there were many challenges, that's what I would do. You know? Just take a moment. I think that's what Shabbat is all about. You're entering into Shabbat. You're going to have an awesome Shabbos. I know what's waiting for you to Shabbos. Some of you do also. Unbelievable Shabbos. You're going to... Have you met Rabbi Aaron yet? You're going to have an amazing Shabbat. I commend you for what you have succeeded in doing, which is to gain something, to grow with it, to take it with you, to make a difference, and to come back to remind yourselves of why you wanted to go out and make a difference, that hopefully will enable you to make even more of a difference. And to the degree that you've allowed us to be a part of that journey, I thank you. I'm really, really looking forward to an awesome summer. And I wish you a phenomenal Shabbat, a Shabbat Shalom. Just going to turn this off and name it. Hang on one second.